Hello and welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast where each week I explore what it means to be a kick-ass and kind adult in our modern world. Expect strong language and viewpoints, as no topic is out of bounds here. My guests and I will navigate the complete spectrum from wildness to responsibility with compassion and curiosity rather than expectation. I'm Ebony Allard and I'm a misfit turned maven, an author, a coach and your host for Adulting with Ebony. Come on then, let's do this. Hey everyone and welcome to Adulting with Ebony. Today I am lucky enough to be joined by Dre Domenichini, is that right?
Close, Domenichini, CH is a K sound in Italy.
Oh man, I'm joined by Dre, who was born autistic and found dealing with people very hard. And so disappointed by his progress in reaching personal goals, he decided to harness the hyper-focusing of his condition to study human behaviour. And 7 years into his journey, he's now disarmingly capable at figuring out what makes people tick and has been producing a podcast about becoming a more effective human being. And I am really fascinated by that and by all of this and your story. So thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. I'm going to start how I've been starting quite a lot, just because we're talking about adulting, which is a completely made up word. What does adulting mean to you?
See, it depends whether I'm talking about it to myself or someone's trying to tell me I'm not acting adult enough. Okay. I find when people tell me to grow up, it's because I'm doing something they don't want me to do, or I'm not doing something they want me to do. Mm-hmm. And so I completely discount that. I don't like that sort of type of adult shaming. Yeah. But on a personal level, there is such a thing as adulting for me. And I just find that sort of coming to own who you are and your talents, your problems, and kind of figuring out how to try and make them better and try to find your place in the world and, you know, taking responsibility for yourself and how you impact the universe.
I like that. And we kind of agree on that, because we're each born with our lot, whatever that is, right? Some good, some bad, some ugly, some fun, some the same as everyone else, some completely different. And we can come at that with a whole range of attitudes. And I know that I have been one for coming at it from a place of victim and martyr. And like for me, the point where it's like, you know what, I'm an adult now, is when I was just able to take ownership of it and take some kind of personal responsibility for all of it.
And I guess another aspect for me, it's been sort of deciding the kind of person and role that I want, that I aspire to, and that hopefully I can achieve, but also sort of the mental avatar of who the ideal Dre is, and striving for that, whether it's being, you know, a good friend, being kind, or, you know, all those things, kind of coming up with what that is and sort of pursuing that on, you know, professional, spiritual, emotional level.
So how did you end up there? And I'm kind of, I guess I'm interested because each person's experience is different, but also having autism thrown in there and that being like so unique in and of itself, I'm really intrigued, like how you just, like what happened? Was there a pivotal moment or has it been a slow gradual thing? Yeah.
A little bit of both, actually. So there's been a slow gradual journey from the moment I had to interact with other people onwards. But there's also been a few key sort of chapters that have changed things considerably. I guess small things like first joining a jiu-jitsu kind of group as a kid with my friends that started to teach me discipline and sort of learning a skill and learning how to use my body was kind of instrumental at sort of me coming out of my shell to begin with. The second sort of chapter in that particular journey was taking up bodybuilding. That sort of brought it to the next level, because there I was responsible for myself and for my development. and seeing effects, being able to see that my efforts were repaid with results and being in complete charge of that was an important lesson in discipline, in setting goals, achieving them, and feeling like anything was possible so long as I worked hard at it. And so that's it.
I love that. I'm going to interrupt you, but only because...
Yeah, please.
Okay, so for me, it's I use weightlifting particularly, but like any kind of personal physical experience to help demonstrate that to my coaching clients, right? Like the more effort you put in, the more reward you get. Or if, you know, when you first start out, you might only be able to lift this, and after a period of time, that changes, right? So there's something physical and tangible that you can see and touch that's changing. And yet my experience of my relationship with exercise and that kind of discipline, I suppose, and focus was really skewed for years. And it's only like last year that I got a diagnosis of a thyroid condition that explains like so much stuff. But for such a long time, it perpetuated the victim thing, where I was like, everybody else can go in and train. Everybody else can do this, and this result happens for them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't happening for me. And so because my attitude was also still in a place of like, it's not fair, I'm different from everybody else. See, this is another example which demonstrates that. And then once my mindset had shifted and changed, and life was different, and my attitude was different, and I believed that everything was here to teach or serve me in some way, then I was able to actually stop looking just at weight loss and start looking at other aspects of my physical practice.
Yeah.
That led then to a diagnosis, which has shifted everything.
Well, it's such a big thing, like thyroid issues. It's as if, you know, you had the handbrake on, you know, and you're wondering why you weren't moving. And it makes such a difference once you sort of figure out that it's just some small adjustments, whether it's diet or the drugs for thyroid condition, and suddenly you're on the same, you know, track as everybody else. So it's and there's little things like that in every aspect, both of health, business, personality, that if we don't realize that we are playing with that handicap, we think that it's something that we can't do.
Yeah. Okay, so you were bodybuilding and understanding that you could put in effort and get reward. And yeah.
Yes. And that plus the upbringing I had with my sort of parents being really loving and accepting and understanding set me up to have almost the inverse journey most people have. Most people have to build up confidence and think that they can achieve anything. I thought I could achieve anything. I had to learn that maybe that wasn't the case. And I came here after I finished my master's degree in biomedical science from New Zealand, where I was living with my family. And I thought I was going to conquer London in a few years. But career-wise, I just kept not being able to find my footing. I moved away from science and I was trying to learn business, because I learned that at least biology is not like computers, where you can be you can't become Bill Gates overnight. If you have a good idea, like you can with sort of apps and things. And so I thought, okay, well, I have to be a businessman rather than being a scientist. And so I was trying to learn business things by being part of companies that I sort of admired or believed. But I got suckered into the corporate race. But every time I would only climb maybe one rung or two rung, and then I would sort of hit a cap because I wasn't able to win over people. I was just unable to bring people over to my projects or my ideas, because even though they were really good, I didn't understand or believe that I needed to charm them on a personal and emotional level. I thought that the idea itself would convince them.
Okay.
And that was very, very hard. And sort of, it started to slowly erode that confidence that I had from earlier in life, until it just hit a point where I didn't really have a job. Each job kept getting shorter and shorter in time, how long I was there for. And at the same time, those same difficulty came to bite me in the ass, romance-wise, where the person that I'd been with for a long time, that I believed was my soulmate, for a variety of reasons, we ended up breaking up. And that, combined with not being sure what to do to move to the career goals that I'd set for myself, you know, earlier in life as a teenager or even earlier, just put me in a place where I realized that I needed to change on a fundamental level. I needed to figure out a version of myself that could actually achieve the goals that I wanted. And that was the biggest point of change. That you said, you know, was it a slow gradual thing or was it one event? It was both. So those little things that happened that I mentioned a few, but that one was the pivotal, okay, what do I do now?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, in the spiritual community, people often call that like dark night of the soul, or, you know, there's this kind of that, or the rock bottom, or that kind of thing. And having experienced like more than two of them now, I no longer believe that it's just this one time thing, right? Like it keeps going and keeps going. But it sounds like we're in a similar belief of, or a similar situation of getting to a point where there's an element of needing to figure out who you really were and like it, or at least that's my version. And it sounds like from what you're saying, there was a little bit more to it. There was like, figure out who you really were and change some things.
Yes. I think maybe I was too accepting of some of the limitations of the way my mind works, which aren't bad depending on what you want to do. So I didn't want to do the typical autistic careers of computer programmer or technician, even though the world was trying to keep putting me in those places. I wanted to be a leader. I wanted to be in positions to affect people and make big things that I thought of happen rather than helping other people make their stuff work. And I realized that, you know, that type of person I was being couldn't get that done because he couldn't convince people even when the idea was great. Or if I convinced people, it was only a few of them.
Is that because you were unlikable or because you didn't have empathy, or you were like, what was it that you...
Yeah, it was a lack of empathy, a lack of charisma. I was okay, but not enough to charm people because I wasn't appealing to their personal emotional interests. I was appealing to them on a logical level.
Okay. It's so interesting because I didn't know any of this about you the first time I met you. And I know a lot, not a lot, but I know far more men than I know women who have kind of set out to learn this stuff, right? Because it's not necessarily as natural for them. And so there's much, much more of a kind of textbook and learned understanding of emotion and of empathy and of charisma and all of those things. And so there's a tiny bit of me, my own stuff, my own judgment, that's like, no, it's much better when it's natural. You can't learn it because then it's just manipulation.
Right. So that was part of the journey, sort of understanding all around that. And there's two sides to it. So I did, in fact, come to first practice this and try to learn it from, because I thought it was a perfect way to quickly test things, pick up artist stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And not because I was trying to get dates or get laid. It was purely because I could test being charming and seeing if it worked or not.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, when you're learning it as a sort of learn by the book procedure, it is very much a manipulation and it's kind of artificial. But like with any skill, if you do it right and you learn the right way, it eventually gets internalized and then it does become natural. Mm-hmm. The difference with someone that's natural, you know, earlier is that they did the right things as a kid, because nothing is natural. But at kindergarten, they were the types that enjoyed social interaction. So they spent, you know, 3-4 years of their lives talking to each other, playing with each other, having fun with that, and learning it when you're a kid at a much more subconscious level. But if you get to like 20 or 30 and you haven't picked any of those things up, you do have to go back and do it in a more textbook manner. The important thing is to not get disillusioned, because one of the things I see in people learning pickup is that when they start to see results, and they start to see that if they say this routine that they've learned off by heart, that it has an effect on a woman.
Yeah.
They start to dehumanize the person because they're like, oh, they're just a robot responding to my inputs. But ultimately, that's just how we all work as people. And if you start to accept that, yeah, if you're nice to someone, you know, they might like you. That's just what it is. It's not like you're putting a magic spell on them. And so long as it comes from a genuine place and you want to make the interaction and the person come off better than they were before they met you, then it's a very different energy you're putting out into the world.
Attitude. It's so important, isn't it? Right. Attitude and intention, like where it comes from. I did some work with Matthew Hussey a little while ago. And I also did some work with Mastin Kipp quite a while ago. And one of the most profound things that either of them got me to do was to you might not know this about me. I'm actually really shy and a massive introvert, right? And people don't know this about me because I was told very early on that I was an extrovert. I can put it on and I can show up. But as I've learned to be me, like, and really pay attention and be truthful with my own energy levels and whether I'm really interested in someone or whether I'm just playing a game, like all of that stuff, I've realized I'm actually quite shy. And both of them got me to practice catching someone's eye in public and holding their gaze for like 7 seconds, right? And then smiling and then looking away. It's the most terrifying thing in the world to do when you first start. And I don't know why, because what's going to happen? Someone's going to smile back or like maybe come and say hello or like, you know, there's nothing terrifying necessarily that's going to happen. But it was so hard for me to start with that.
Oh, it's unbelievably like hard. And unless you have that confidence and that alpha sort of thing built in, because it is it's either a challenge or just based on a sort of our ape evolution, you know, staring at someone. And if you stare at a gorilla in the eye, you will get turned to shreds because it's like, I can take you on. And we've retained some of that. So it's a protection mechanism, not being able to do that. If you're an introvert, you tend to feel a little bit more like you operate better in the shadows and, you know, you don't want to upset anyone. And so you have that built-in protection mechanism. And as an autistic person, I found it almost impossible to look people in the eyes. I tend to look at their lips or just slightly off to the side, and realizing that that's why they couldn't connect with me.
Right.
Because you don't need to stare, but brief amounts of eye contact build rapport.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a bit of a negotiation. I like to think of every human interaction as almost a dance, you know, a bit of leading, a bit of push and pull. And if done right, it's beautiful and becomes something that is more than the two people moving.
Yeah.
And everything's like that to me now, but it was hard. And they themselves didn't know that that's why necessarily they didn't fully trust me either, but they didn't.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So, if someone's starting out and they are feeling like building rapport and building trust with people is difficult for them.
Yeah.
What's like one thing that was really useful to you or like might be something they can practice?
To be honest, if you practice the pickup methods without the pickup, but just to make friends, that can go a long way. Purely, like, for example, they have a lot of pickup artists have a 3-second rule, which is if you see someone that you want to talk to, just go talk to them right away. Like, you have 3 seconds. If you don't, after 3 seconds, you've missed that opportunity, move on to somebody else. But sort of training yourself to maybe do that 10 times per evening when going out to a bar or something, and just starting a conversation. And it'll bomb. The point is that you will fail. To treat it like any exercise. You know, the first time you're trying to do a really good push-up, you know, you don't give up because you didn't do it the first time. You do it again. And treating it like exercise. The same kind of, I will practice until I get it right. And actually, it's going wrong is an important thing. It's better for it to go horribly wrong because then you can have a think and go, why do they immediately run away from me?
So interesting around failure because, there's so many things like that. I had no idea that I was just a natural at. And so learning stuff that's outside my comfort zone has been one of the hardest things I've had to do as an adult, right? Because I don't like being rubbish at things. Like, and I'm not alone in that. None of us like being rubbish at things. But as you were saying that, I'm like, you know what? I had to like pay someone. When I first started, again, working with a personal trainer, like after the diagnosis, we started with push-ups. And he was like, okay, you can do girly push-ups. They can be like on your knees, but I want you to really like really bend to your arms. And I showed him a couple of push-ups. He's like, no, that's terrible. I want you to now essentially crash your face on the floor, right? Like, you need to do this. You need to fail because that's the thing that you're scared of and you need to do it. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm just not. And he's like, well, that's so interesting. You won't even have a go. You've just stopped. You've just decided it's not happening. Do you want to get stronger? I'm like, yeah, I really want to do a pull-up. It's like, okay, we're starting here. And this is, I'm the expert and I'm telling you what to do. And you're flat out saying no. I'm like, oh, okay. And what's really interesting, and I've learned this about myself from personal trainers, it's affected my romantic relationships, is that I am someone who says no straight away.
Okay.
Then goes away and thinks about it.
Yeah.
Practices it on my own, has a little play with it. And then I'll come back and be like, yeah, so that thing, you were right. But it's something I've really had to learn as well. Like, learn to come back, learn to like, be okay with not having got it right, and to drop my pride and say, you know what, I wasn't right, or I wasn't willing to listen to you, or I was a little bit scared, or, you know, any of those things. And so accessing my vulnerability has been a huge part of growing up for me.
And it's amazing when you learn things like that, how then you turn it around to other people. So if someone tells you no, like, you know they're wrong, but they're digging in their feet, yeah. For example, you know the other side of that. And so you let them go and come back instead of trying to challenge them right away. And that, you must have found that that's really helpful. Basically, being kind to others in the way that they had to be kind to you in the past.
Yeah. And also, like, I've noticed it impact sales particularly. I don't like to be a pushy salesperson. I don't like to be a manipulative salesperson. But no doesn't always mean no. And I always used to think that it did, right? No might mean, in the case in point, an example I just shared, no might mean you've made me feel uncomfortable and shown me something I didn't know about myself. And I'm not sure, like, it's a big gap, and I'm not sure whether or not I want to say yes right now.
Yeah.
And knowing that, I give people space. Like, some people like to make decisions, and actually, if they haven't made that decision there and then on the call, you know, it isn't a yes. But other people need space and time to come back and be like, okay, well, it's a no now. How about we speak in 3-4 days and see where you're at with it then?
Definitely. Yeah, learning all these things has been what my last 7 years has been about, really practicing them. Another tip is read certain books. If I had to pick top two to start with, would be The 48 Laws of Power, which I've made an entire season on my podcast about, and The Power of the Actor, which is a book about acting.
Fantastic.
Every interaction is a scene in a play. The rules apply. They're the same rules. Each person has a scene objective in real life, just as much as in a play. You know, they're trying to look important, for example, if you dissect it. Like, that's what everything they say and do is about, looking important. So if you reward that by making them feel like they look important, then you've disarmed their scene objective and they feel relaxed and you can move on to selling to them or getting to know them or whatever it is. But most people are driven by one very intense desire: being loved, being important, or being significant, or being left alone in some cases. But it's very, very specific and very powerful primary driver out of which everything else they do comes from. And so I found it very useful to study sort of high level acting courses to learn how people in the real world act.
That's fascinating. Fantastic. Thank you. I will make sure that they get both those books get added to the show notes so people can find them and access them even. It's such a cold. anything else that's been interesting about people that you've learned in this 7 years of studying?
Ooh, I mean, so many things. It's kind of hard to like, I've been trying to put it all down, and the podcast has been a great way to kind of explain some of the things that I've learned.
Yeah. I feel like it's just
that people are driven by childhood stuff.
Yeah.
That we're sort of a house of cards almost. And the first few cards are the important ones because they build your framework for how you learn everything else. So whether you were in a loving environment or whether you were in an environment where your ego was challenged constantly or anything else like that, then it shapes the way you interact with others. And then therefore that colors that even more, and each interaction becomes more skewed that way. And when you regress into each personal individual's sort of issues as an adult, you find that they're still trying to get approval from their mom, or, you know, they're still trying to overcome, you know, embarrassment issues that were set up because, you know, their father was someone that would get embarrassed constantly and they picked it up from them, you know, how to behave towards others. And all the, it is as simple as, I mean, not quite the way Freud put it, but there is a real strong component of what happened to you as a kid shapes everything else. That was really interesting to start seeing. I learned a few techniques to help people find what those things are. There's a particularly nice, powerful technique that I can share with you, the PDF for, which is called the Card 3 exercise, that you start writing things down on some pieces of paper, and at the end you reread them with a certain context telling you what each of them mean, and you find out why you behave the way that you do when difficult things happen to you.
Oh, amazing. I think people listening will absolutely love that. So yeah, if you're up for sharing that with us, then I will make sure that it's available as well. Joy, thank you. Our 20 minutes just went bing and disappeared. Yeah, if you're up for it, then we'll get you back and we can talk about something more
specific. Almost definitely.
Yeah. I'm going to see whether you're up for ending with a little confession with me. I haven't. So I'm an adult, but I totally didn't prepare for this today. So I'm also going to have a think. If you've got one, go for it. Otherwise, I will see if I've got anything else in there.
Did you? I know what you're asking me, but I don't know if you actually asked it.
Go on.
Okay.
Go on. Yeah, yeah.
So I've been thinking about this. There's a few, I think, but the one that I'm going to share today is that when I get overwhelmed, I do regress to a particularly funny, if it's not dangerous, childhood behavior. I remember reading that kids, when they see fire, they just shut the door. You know, if the room's on fire, kids shut the door. So you have to teach them what to do. And they do that for others. When something is overwhelming, that's what they tend to do, just pretend like it's not there. And I know that when things get past my threshold, which I've grown as a person to the point where the threshold where I'm overwhelmed is quite high. Yeah. But if I ever do reach it, like too many problems professionally and emotionally, you know, things are just not going right, there'll be a point where I just shut down and I ignore it. And, you know, work will get even more piled up, or, you know, I won't see the people that I need to have a conversation with to resolve something. And so that's something that I don't adult sometimes. If it gets past my point of bearing with it, I will kind of shut down, maybe just binge watch a Netflix series and until I feel comfortable to see the real world again.
You know what? I think that's a really great share. I also think that that's actually a very adult way of dealing with it. We had an episode a couple of weeks back about tantrums and about how good they are actually for your body to release and to move through. I'm saying that because I absolutely am someone who every now and then just gets to the point where I'm like, no, everyone out, everything out. I need some alone time to recalibrate. And yeah, I absolutely get that. I'm probably going to go with something similar today. You know, I'm an adult, but I'm not always polite in telling people that I need some space. Yeah.
It's hard to understand for people that when they're in that space, they want to connect.
Yeah.
They don't understand. Like, and I now understand them. I know that they want to be with me because they're overwhelmed, but then they get confused when I'm shutting down and I'm like, no. You know how you feel that you want to be with people? Like, imagine the opposite. That's what I feel.
And for me, that's the difference between introversion and extroversion. Like, actually, is that in a place of overwhelm or in a place of, low energy, an introvert's desire is to be alone, to recalibrate and to recharge, and an extrovert's desire is to be around other people to recalibrate and to gain energy. And I really like that, like that explanation set me free, because it's not that I'm not confident around people, very confident around people, I just don't like them very much quite a lot.
Interacting with them, I don't know if it's the same for you. So if you think of your emotional integrity as a bank account with a number on it, interacting with people for me takes money out of the account. It's a withdrawal. Whereas for an extrovert, they're getting money into the account when they interact with other people.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. That energy that allows you to be who you are, for me, is being sapped even by people that I like.
Yeah, and it is even by people that I like. My very, very close friend, like yesterday or the day before, said to me, I really want to spend some time with you. I don't feel like we've hung out. I was like, I've spent every day with you for the last 7 or 8 days. What? And she was like, no, but there were other people there. Like, I just want to spend some time, you and me. And I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, I'm up for doing that. And I really recognize, like, I love the fact that you want to spend more time with me, but I need a little break before we do that. And part of that kind of adulting process is being able to set that boundary and ask for that need, and also let her know that I do want to do that, just not right now. Yeah. Dre, thank you. If people want to find you online, like, where's the best place for them to go?
On social media, I'm generally at MSC Dre. I'm not quite a doctor, so I've only got a master's of science. So not Dr. Dre, MSC Dre. And voicesinthedark.world is the website where my podcast and everything else that I do is.
Fantastic. I'll put all the links up so people can find you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been fun.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you so much for all your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, sharing, so that more people can come and enjoy and engage with us. Really, thank you.